Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
A man is being questioned by police in connection with the theft from a solicitor's office of a document relating to an affair between the Liberal Democrat leader Paddy Ashdown and his secretary. The Liberal Democrats campaign manager Des Wilson has joined Labour's call for a coordinated police inquiry into a spate of similar break-ins.
United left the Leeds Bradford airport this morning for the 90-minute flight, knowing that up to 3,000 of their supporters will be following within the next 48 hours. The team, of course, is hand-picked. The club believes and hopes that its supporters will behave as if they've been as well.
Good break again. Walter, a great chance for Stuttgart here. A little chip. It's in the back of the net. And Leeds are behind. Fritz Walter.
Today hasn't gone entirely smoothly. The plane was delayed by an air traffic control problem for a few moments. And the squad arrived to find that a training session planned for this afternoon had been cancelled.
Got it away. Oh, great save by Lukic. Well, they scored again. And it's that man again, Fritz Walter, and it's 2-0.
Whether the club or indeed the city like it or not, Leeds United's reputation abroad is a feared one, and the whole of British sport is holding its breath on Wednesday. Even the Foreign Office has been involved in the preparations. If there is any bother, the repercussions could be serious.
Yes, and he's clutching the back of his leg. It's a hamstring.
And the real problem there might be not only tonight, but it might well mean that Eric Cantona misses the second leg as well.
We don't want to cause any trouble. We just want to win the game, go home, you know, and enjoy ourselves. And no Leeds fans are going to go there with an attitude to get the club kicked out.
It's another goal! 3-0. That's a disaster now for Leeds.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller, and opposite me, as always, is Jonathan Wilson. And with us in the studio today is a man I'm delighted to introduce you to. It's Peter Drury, the football commentator. We all know the voice. We've all heard the commentary before. Peter, it's a pleasure to be in your company.
It's a real privilege to be here. Thank you.
Of course, commentator of the year at the FSA Awards.
Yeah, no counting for taste, is that?
You're very humble indeed. The game you've chosen today, we go back to 1992-1993 season. Stuttgart 3, Leeds United 0 in the Champions League first round, first leg.
Mm.
Why have you chosen this game?
Well, it's a self-indulgent choice because it was just a moment in my then fledgling career which took my excitement levels to a new point.
Yeah.
I was, as very good luck would have it, a relatively new reporter at BBC Radio Leeds. Mm. I'd arrived just as Leeds were being promoted into the first division, as it was then, had 1 year, then they won the title. And when I got on the plane to Stuttgart, that was the first aeroplane I ever boarded.
My goodness.
At the age of whatever I was then, 23, 24.
And you made up for it since then.
Well, I have. I've boarded a few. So yeah, I'm afraid my carbon footprint has been worse.
We
since
can
then.
Forgive you for that.
But I just remember sitting at the back of one of those charter planes at Leeds Bradford Airport with all of the great football writers who wouldn't have known who I was and thinking, wow. I didn't think I'd made it because I felt so inferior to everybody who was around me.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thrilled by the whole prospect. And then to be at a European Cup tie and sit in this this grand continental stadium and be part of it and follow this story with the zeal that you only have as a really young journalist. You know, there was nothing that the editor could have said to me, do this, that I'd have said no. I would have stripped naked and run across the pitch if that had been the editorial instruction. I was that keen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the narrative that played out from the start of that tie, frankly, through to the moment when Leeds were finally knocked out by Rangers a couple of months later, mm-hmm. was, journalistically speaking, extraordinary. And in terms of football, no less extraordinary. There were five games of football, mm-hmm. each of which would be worthy of its place in this podcast, I would contend.
And the zeal you speak of as a young journalist back in the day is the kind of zeal that Jonathan still has, I would argue, you know.
Maybe not. No, my memory of flying to Stuttgart, I think I've only been to Stuttgart once, was Chelsea played then in the Champions League, and the weather was atrocious. It was quite heavy snow, and Lufthansa lost my bags. So I was hopelessly ill-equipped clothing-wise, and also my English to German plug adapter was in my bag. So I spent the entire day rushing around Stuttgart, speaking bad German electronic shops, trying to find an adapter.
Marvelous.
And I was reading, is it called The Unconsoled, a novel by Kazuo Ishiguro?
I'm sure
Which
it is
about a concert pianist trying to find a concert venue but not being able to do so in a slightly dystopian Central European landscape.
So many parallels.
And that felt so kind of appropriate.
I think I'm right in saying, sorry, had you finished?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say in football terms, the other big Stuttgart moment, I think, was did England not beat Ecuador there in the World Cup?
Oh, I was there for that.
Oh, with
that,
the Beckham free kick.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
My memories of Stuttgart are rather less fun.
Well, the Beckham free kick, something we could all get behind, of course.
Yes.
But going all the way back to 1992, I mean, we were just talking off air there that the Leeds side in the early 90s, that Leeds side, can be easily forgotten.
Well,
as you say, promoted and then won the league, and there they were in this European Cup competition in which English sides, of course, had been banned for the sort of previous handful of years.
Absolutely. you really have to take yourself back that generation and understand where we sat in terms of the history of British football. A, this was now Leeds having won the First Division for the last time, was the first year of the Premier League. It was also the first year that the European Cup had turned into the newfangled Champions League. As you say, the European post-Heysel ban had only very recently ended. It ended actually in 1990, but Liverpool won the league and their ban, because of their involvement, was extended. So they couldn't join the European Cup then. Arsenal had a very brief run the following year, and then Leeds were the next. And that Leeds team, as you say, sometimes slightly airbrushed out, even of Leeds' own history. People still refer back misty-eyed about the Reevey team and, of course, the great, great team of the 70s. And more recent generations are inclined to reminisce, again, with great justification, about the Champions League runs under David O'Leary and that big spending, crazy, crazy spell. but Leeds won the title.
Yeah.
They won the title at Manchester United's expense in 1992 with a team which fans of that generation and young journalists of that generation could just reel off.
Well, it's very easy to reel off because there was just an 11. Lukic, Sterling, Dorigo,
Batty, White, Fairclough.
Batty and McAllister back in midfield, Speed and Strachan, Wallace and Chapman. And obviously Wallace has gone for Cantona by this point.
Yes.
But that didn't last very long. But yeah, it was a very obvious 1-11.
I mean, that midfield,
in a way that I'm not sure any championship winning teams had since.
That midfield, Batty, McAllister, Rowcastle in there as well.
Well, Rowcastle also
played that game. Yeah.
But Rowcastle played right back in this game.
But I'm just saying the players that were in that squad, you know, it was a great side.
Great side.
Great names in there.
That midfield, as Jonathan said, you know, was as good a midfield as was it imaginable, certainly at that point.
And it was just so well balanced. I mean, okay, maybe it lacked a little bit of width if you're going to criticise it for anything, but Strachan could put crosses in. Speed was obviously great on the ball.
McAllister,
lovely ball player.
And Batty was a destroyer, but better than a destroyer,
Yeah.
You know, he was a destroyer. That was part of his job. But, and my goodness me, you know, those days they didn't measure how many metres you ran in a game, but he ran a lot of metres and he won the ball. And he actually, later in the run, had to play right back. Leeds had a problem at right back.
Yeah, it was Sterling injured.
Sterling was injured, John Newsome sometimes had to play right back.
Newsome played centre-back in Barcelona, didn't he? And Fairclough went to right back.
Right back. And so it was actually, it became a problem because Sterling, who they used to call Zico, and was very much a Howard Wilkinson disciple. He'd come with him from Sheffield Wednesday and so on. He was a great, almost ahead of his time, overlapping fullback. You know, he did the attacking bit in the way they do as a matter of course now.
Well, again, we were talking before we began. I remember the Leeds team in their first season up, beating Sunderland 1-0 at Roker Park in an utterly poisonous atmosphere. A game that Sunderland fans remember for John Kay making a disgusting tackle on Peter Haddock, for which he was rightly sent off, although the angle I was at the time, it wasn't that clear. Mm-hmm. But Mel Sterling got the winner, which was a 25-yard drive.
Yeah, he could strike a ball beautifully. Well, I took penalties at half-time in his testimonial.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How many penalties did you take?
Two. Ask me how many I scored.
How many did you score?
Two.
There you go.
Yes.
Again, you know, I thought that might be the game.
In front of the cop at Ellen Road.
Who's in goal, more importantly? Oh,
Leeds United's under-18s goalkeeper.
Oh, it's not like it's not a mascot. It's
no.
Yeah, not a mascot. Yeah, absolutely. Well, back to the game. So Leeds, they're in the European Cup, or the Champions League is becoming. Football is... it's beginning to come into the modern era, you could say. It must have been an exciting time. And as you say, you're on the flight with all these great players and the best side in England. Their defence of the title, of course, was pretty poor, it's fair to say. But as a young journalist and so on, it must have been so exciting.
Well, it was. I mean, it was a thrill to be a part of... we weren't a part of Leeds United, actually. Mm. You know, Howard Wilkinson was a hard man and not necessarily... media friendly.
An underrated hard man and tough
guy. Listen, I think of him very, very fondly.
Yeah.
But not least because I sort of learnt at his knee. Uh-huh. And, you know, he used to keep me waiting 2 or 3 hours to do the Friday, what we used to call, you know, the groin strain interview, who's fit, who's not, all of that sort of thing. And was a tough nut to crack and easily upset by a cheeky young reporter, and by the whole of the media. You know, he wasn't easy, but over time, you hopefully, you know, got him on side a bit, and it was great. And
he was a former school teacher, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Because I think my favourite media story with him, there was a game, I think it was Steve Hodge, had been booked for leaving the wall early, and then whoever the other team was, then scored from a free kick when it was retaken. And he used Pythagoras. He explained Pythagoras in the post-match press conference to explain that because Steve Hodge was not running from the middle of the wall, he actually was 10 yards back.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah, no, he is a very intelligent man. Of course, he's still at the head now of the LMA. Anyway, I learned an awful lot from him, which is irrelevant in this story. What's relevant is that the players who played for him played according to his structure, and he had them absolutely on board. Is he still the last Englishman?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
To win the title.
And so there you are. I mean, his record was fantastic. He had his detractors, but I don't really understand why.
But what did he think of going into this, you know, Europe's top competition? Was he hopeful? Was he maybe slightly dismissive of it?
Presumably he'd never been in charge of a European game before, had he?
I haven't checked that, but I don't
suppose
so. I can't
see who he could have been in charge. He was a Wednesday before, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yeah. So, unless they had a little UEFA Cup dalliance, but I doubt 80s, it. Yeah.
Quite clearly, he didn't have a lot of experience in European
competition. But you see, again, to go back to how we felt at that time, because we had been out of Europe, the whole thing was an adventure.
Yeah.
And actually, there wasn't, I suppose, massive expectation, because the sense was that we were catching up and learning.
Yeah.
You know, English clubs were only just joining in again. And how do you do this European thing? Mm. And it wasn't like the
Premier League. We are talking about football, not politics, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, exactly. Just to be quite in the current climate.
We weren't in the you know, last 15 years of the Premier League or last 20 years where, but by then, all the best players in the world weren't playing in England.
That's right, yeah.
You know, Serie A was very sexy. Mm. And we weren't necessarily expecting to have, you know, four of the last eight in the Champions. Mm-hmm. Well, that by the way, the other point, only the champions were in it.
Yes.
You know, and that's why when we come eventually to the Rangers part, that's why the Battle of Britain was so big then, because it really did take an extraordinary set of circumstances for the champions of England to play the champions of Scotland.
Yeah.
Which played into that in a way. When, how often have we seen Celtic play United or City, or, you know, in recent, it's still great every time it happens, but it was mighty special then.
It certainly was. All right, let's have a quick break, and after which we'll get down to the actual football itself.
And it goes to Cantona, a good ball too, and Cantona! Yes!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
It's a corner and then it goes towards right near post. It's a goal! Chapman! Amazing! Leeds United are one goal away from achieving Mission Impossible.
Welcome back to Greatest Games, everybody, on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Now then, you touch down in Stuttgart and you get yourself over to the stadium. I'm sure there's a hotel stop in between. What did you think going into Leeds going into this game? How confident were you personally of Leeds thinking these are the champions of England? Did you think, oh, well, look at the players, they should be fine? Or was there that nervousness of, I haven't been in European competition for a long time, we're still a bit green in terms of English clubs and in the competition and so on and so forth?
I don't know how the players felt, but I think as a media core, there was an inclination to be a bit wowed by Stuttgart.
Yeah.
These were the champions of the Bundesliga. They had a fella up front who scored a couple of the goals called Fritz Walter, which is a very famous name in German football because he played when they won the World Cup in 1954. Different one, obviously. Yeah.
And no relation at all.
No relation.
This one was born 6 years later. So presumably was named consciously after him. But
so I don't know.
But I can imagine in yesteryear there's a lot of Fritz Walters in Germany.
Yeah, there probably were.
I mean, yeah, very stereotypically, as you say, the champions of the country didn't have people moving around too much. A three foreigners rule, which I'm sure we'll come on to quite crucially in a bit. But yes, very
and also
German.
They had Guido Buchwald, who the captain who played for Germany and when they won the World Cup in West Germany when they won the World Cup in 1990.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there, I think there was, maybe it's because I was very young. Maybe if you ask the sort of venerated writers of the time, David Lacy or someone like that, who was a generation and a bit ahead of me. He might have been less starry-eyed than I was. Mm-hmm. I was certainly starry-eyed to the point where if Leeds won this tie, it was going to be a mighty, mighty achievement. Mm-hmm. And so went into it in that kind of wide-eyed way. In a way, I suppose, that you might if you were a lower league team playing a home game against one of the big boys in the FA Cup.
Sure.
You know, this just might happen. And if it does, wow, what a day we're going to have.
Yeah.
But don't be terribly surprised if it doesn't. And Leeds form wasn't good either. They hadn't started the season well as champions. They'd had a great win in the Charity Shield. Actually, one of the great Charity Shields. Cantona got a hat-trick against Liverpool at Wembley. And they'd had one notable win. They'd only won one of their first eight Premier League games. And again, that was a Cantona hat-trick against Tottenham.
And this was a defence of the title, we should remind.
They were not
ourselves.
Defending their title well.
They didn't,
well,
and they didn't win away all season.
I mean, they didn't.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
But certainly locally, they were still riding the wave of being champions.
Yeah.
And Leeds, there are plenty of examples, but Leeds is one of the great one-club cities. And it's a one-eyed city. It is Leeds, Leeds, Leeds. Mm-hmm. And so the sort of groundswell of thrill still very much existed up to this game.
Yeah. And what did you make of this tie yourself, Jonathan? Because, again, people may think, well, Stuttgart aren't. There are bigger names, but they were the champions.
Oh, the
champions,
champions.
England against champions.
And also,
Germany.
I mean, I think Peter's right, just... It was a different world. They were the Bundesliga champions.
Exactly.
And that gave them a glamour.
Yeah.
And I think that even when I went over with Chelsea in 2005-06, would that have been, I think? Maybe 2006-07. Uh-huh. Even then, they were still a great side because they were, a good German side. It wasn't like now where sort of you've got the obvious Bayern, huge gap, Dortmund, huge gap, maybe Leipzig in there as well.
I take your point though.
But it wasn't such a sense of a hierarchy, it was just, these are a really good German team. Mm-hmm. And you look down the list of names, and not just Buchwald, but Gaudino as well, who was a familiar name to us. They had two or three players you'd heard of. Christoph Daum, we knew, was a sort of promising young coach, who obviously went on to greater things and then far worse things with Leverkusen.
Krzysztof Dumm, as he was called by the British press, was, you know, in the return leg.
And then, you know, of course, he got the ban for cocaine just before he'd been appointed German national manager when he got the ban for cocaine.
Yeah. It's fair to say he...
An interesting life.
Yeah, he experienced the slings and arrows.
Yeah, you know, I bumped into him much, much later, totally randomly. He was sat in the seat in front of me in a stadium in Buenos Aires watching Huracán on a Friday night. No idea what he's doing.
My goodness.
Had a little chat to him. I mean, he must have
been. The life and times of Jonathan Wilson is a glorious thing.
You've gone into this stadium in the middle of nowhere, Buenos Aires, little tap on the shoulder. Hello, Christoph. Yeah. Can you give us 5 minutes?
Incredible. Have you watched The Two Popes?
I haven't, no.
Oh, Huracán comes up in that.
Oh, really?
I watched it last night.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sure mine.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big fan. Isn't he?
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. But yes,
he's
game...
a fan of San Lorenzo, the
The original guy is, but there's a bit of kind of terrace humour around Huracán.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, right, San Lorenzo. Yeah. So back we are in Stuttgart in the early 90s. So the game starts, and how does it begin to play out in front of your very eyes, Peter?
Leeds did okay.
Yeah.
Leeds did okay. As memory serves, which is not necessarily reliable, in a pretty uneventful first half.
Yeah.
You know, Leeds stayed alive. The first half would not be worthy of a place on this esteemed podcast on its own. You know, it's nothing each at half time. And so I think Leeds are broadly happy with that. It's the first leg of a two-legged European tie. You know, if you're still in it for the second leg, you're happy. So what happened that was worthwhile happened in 20 pretty awful second half minutes.
Yeah.
And this is around a narrative of Eric Cantona, who was the pin-up boy, although he had played only a very peripheral, if significantly peripheral, part in the title win, because he arrived late and did his turned-up collar bit. Mm. And he scored three goals in the title win, three goals. One of them was against Luton, one of them was against Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. I think one was against Chelsea, and Chelsea weren't the Chelsea that are Chelsea now. So he didn't, you know, but his charisma had been a huge factor, and I suppose in a sort of intangible way helped get Leeds over the line. And I remember commentating on the day that the open top bus went round Leeds and they won the title, and I was actually stood 2 or 3 yards away from Eric Cantona when he stood at top of Leeds Town Hall or whatever it was and delivered the immortal line, "I don't know why, but I love you." And, you know, by November he'd gone to Manchester.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, was Ferguson at the back of the crowd?
No, Howard was right there.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But anyway, that was, of course, something we didn't know at the time. But Cantona didn't have a good game.
No.
Which was partly because he didn't have a good game, but partly also because, as it turned out, he was struggling with an injury, which began to manifest itself at the start of the second half.
Yeah.
And he was hobbling around on the halfway line and played a sort of anyone else must have the ball but me kind of a pass, crossed halfway, gave the ball away, and Stuttgart broke and scored. And that was the start of a sort of 15, 20-minute collapse, which was...
Yeah, I mean, Tony Dorigo ends up being caught horrifically out of position for that goal, but... I think it's probably Cantona's pass, which means he's not where he ought to be. And you know, Kergel comes through with a lovely little three ball to Fritz Walter.
Yeah.
And then a really beautiful little dinked finish.
Great finish.
Yeah. I mean, that is a dictionary definition of a dinked finish. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely.
He was smart. He was fast. He was a dash dart sort of striker.
But that's one of those ones where that type of goal, as you say, you've got the glitz and the glamour of the tie. You're away. You've got the wow factor. You're thinking, blimey, German champions, all the rest of it. You know, obviously West Germany were the World Cup holders at the time and so on and so forth. You go away, 0-0, we're doing okay. And then there's a moment of quality like that and you are reminded of the occasion. You're reminded of the task.
And you're reminded then, and to go back to what sounds a bit like an inferiority complex, and maybe it was, you're reminded of the fact that we were slightly in awe as a football nation because we'd been absent. And you're right, I hadn't really thought about the World Cup winning element, but of course that's key. You know, Germany was the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But even in sort of the, as Kergel plays the pass, you know, he plays it just behind, I think it's Fairclough going across to try and cover. Fairclough ends up sort of sprawling on his knees, kind of just flat in the mud.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like when Boateng goes down, when Messi kind of jinks past him.
That's right.
Just this sort of totally hapless defender, like this tree falling in the forest, is slicker, smarter people kind of zip past him.
Uh-huh. And Fairclough was a really good centre-half. And he was fast.
Yeah.
He was fast. I think, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Jonathan, because you're an encyclopedia, but I think he sort of learnt a bit alongside Stuart Pearce, didn't he, at Nottingham Forest, possibly?
Well, that
he
might be true. I don't know.
He was certainly out of Nottingham Forest. Whether those two coincided or how much they coincided, I'm not certain, but that just sort of rings a bell, perhaps wrongly. But either way, he was fast and he was strong. And he and Chris White, who'd come up from Arsenal, were a super central defensive pair. But in the absence of Tony DiRigo for a few key seconds, Fritz Walter found them easy.
And absolutely. And so that was the first of three, as you're saying.
Yeah, 4 minutes later, Walter gets a second. Yeah. It's a corner, which is sort of headed clear. And then Sverrisson from the edge of the box.
Hits it. Good save from Lukic.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw it, I wondered, could Lukic have got it out of the danger zone a bit more? But I think it's just hit so hard and he's slightly unsighted. I think it's just a good save. And Walter pounces and suddenly, you know, Leeds, having done very well, they find themselves 2-0 down.
Yeah. And you're thinking to yourself, just stay in the tie.
Yeah, and then
you've
it gets
got
worse.
To stay in the tie, yeah. And then Andreas Buck.
Yeah, who outpaced Fairclough, which, as you say, Fairclough was quick.
Correct.
And Buck just sort of went round the outside of him like he was not a quick player.
Absolutely.
And then just one.
Should Lukic have saved that?
Yeah, so I think Lukic, certainly by the end of his career, he was really fallible to those low shots, particularly down to his right.
Yeah, well, maybe so. You've probably watched the same YouTube clips as me, and Ron Atkinson. Ron Atkinson says. He says, I wonder whether Lukic should have saved that or was this effect. He said, but in classic Ron Atkinson Wronglish, he says, or maybe it's got an ugly little bounce. It's got an ugly little bounce in front of his bottom hand and bob. Anyway, you could make a case for saying on another day Lukic might have saved it.
Yeah.
But 0-3 and you're thinking, oh my goodness, the second leg's going to be one of those evenings which we've just, it's going to be fixture fulfilment. Really.
And it's also, you know, 3-0 leads, suddenly in the last 2 or 3 years have become things that are clawbackable.
Yes.
They never used to be.
No.
Well, they never used to be. And also, again, you can't say this enough, that ban for, you know, English clubs in Europe, those kind of nights where you describe about that, you know, people, Man United fans will remember back in the day, or Liverpool fans more recently, the overturning big scores against sides, it's sort of been wiped. And well, they didn't happen that much anyway.
Well, it was much easier to kill games.
Well, it was easy to kill games.
A, you could commit fouls. You just, you
and
know,
pass
foul
it back
people,
to the keeper.
So you could break up attacks, you could break up a rhythm. B, the offside was much less liberal than it is now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, less liberal than it is now. So it's easier to play an offside trap.
Back passes as well.
Well, I mean, back passes are gone by this is the first season after the back pass, isn't it?
Back
pass law came in 92, so
yeah, it was definitely early 90s. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, you know, Leeds fans, I'm guessing, you know, when going 3-0 down into that second leg, wouldn't think, well, hang on a minute, but this side did this last season, and this side, there was that night there. Well, and you draw on these examples.
Now, if you're 3-0 down, you're probably going out, but you go to the game thinking, well, if we nick one and if we're 1-0 up at half time, who knows?
Yeah.
Whereas, I just don't think anybody thought they had a chance here.
No.
Except that Leeds supporters are a pretty stubborn, one-eyed bunch, and that is to their credit, before they start sticking pins in me.
Yeah. Proving your point.
Yeah, proving my point. Yeah. You know, they're not unique in this regard, but Elland Road is a cussed venue, isn't it? You know, and if they were capable of creating the right mood, then you just never know.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose they did, in that championship season, they did have a habit of, they blitz a side with 3 goals in 20 minutes. That was something they could do. And I think when you have a forward like Lee Chapman, who is, it's his physical gifts, but make him a top-class forward. And if you can sort of begin to impose yourself on an opponent, somebody like Chapman, and I guess Cantona, who turned out to be fit for the second leg, to widespread surprise, he also had that physicality. You could get on top of a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Chapman was key. Chapman was key, and he was such a charming bloke. Mm. Really lovely talker. He was your nailed on interview after any game.
Living up to his surname.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know? He was. But I really don't want to talk him down or oversimplify him. But he was really a pretty simple footballer. You know, he was that centre forward that you aimed the ball at.
Yeah.
And he could make it stick, or if it didn't stick, it tended to bounce off a limb conveniently.
Yeah. You know?
It's just the way it worked for him.
Yeah.
And well, he was another Wilkinson disciple. He'd been at Sheffield Wednesday as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Been at Sunderland as well, lest we forget.
Yeah, there we go. You've had your mention, all right.
I think he only scored twice for Sunderland.
Yeah. So, I mean, the second leg was an extraordinary affair.
So, I mean, Sellers came in for Rowcastle at right back. I mean, Scott Sellers was a left winger.
I think Batty played right back in the second.
Oh, possibly he did.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I mean, Sellers played on the left wing and Speed played in the middle with McAllister.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sellers wearing the number two shirt. That's all. Yes. That's the only thing I'm confident of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But the numbers meant something back in those days.
Yeah. But Batty played right back in his number four shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was slightly sacrilegious, I suppose.
Yeah.
Those days. Yeah.
So we've talked about what would they have thought? And so what was the mood in the ground? Were the fans thinking, right, hang on, let's let them have it. Let's make it intimidating atmosphere and we'll see what we can do.
I think so. Yeah. And also there was a nothing to lose situation. Listen, if this is going to be the only European Cup tie we get at Elland Road,
let's
maximise it. Funnily enough, and I had forgotten this until looking back in preparation for this conversation, but actually that huge new stand, as it was about to be at Elland Road, was halfway through its rebuild.
Okay.
And so the capacity was reduced at Elland Road at that time, regardless of which, and I do remember this because you talk in cliche terms about hairs on the back of your neck. Mm. I mean, that was a hairs on the back of the neck night.
Yeah.
It was...
From the off?
Yes. Yeah, I mean that... As the game kicked off, it was one of those games, as the game kicked off, and I think this happens less now, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting older, but that crowd noise for the first kick of the ball, that kind
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were determined they were going to have a damn good go at this.
And they did.
And they really did. And, we call this the greatest game, you call this the greatest game, and... I said to you off air beforehand, mm-hmm. This is probably the greatest game that was ever declared void because it was phenomenal the way Leeds went about this. Uh-huh. It was sort of no fear football because I suppose, as we said, they had nothing to fear.
Yeah.
They could only achieve something remarkable.
Yeah.
They had to score first and they did. And it was a beautiful, crisp volley from Speed. What a lovely player, Gary Speed. It makes me sad every time I say his name. Yeah. That was from a Cantona knockdown.
Yeah, Strachan diagonal, Cantona knockdown. But it was that sort of sense of, I mean, I'm judging this from highlights and my sort of vague memories of watching it on ITV back then. But there's sort of a sense of, I mean, I think what's significant, Raphael Honigstein's book on English football, which in German is called Englischer Fußball, and in English, it's called harder, faster, stronger, better.
That's right. Yeah, that's it.
And there was that sense that an English team could physically outmatch anybody. And I think Bayern had been really bullied by Everton in 84-5 when Everton won the Cup Winners' Cup. And I think that sort of sense that an English team can batter us. When we did the Liverpool Borussia Mönchengladbach game with Tony Evans.
Yeah, good example. Yeah.
The Toshak battered them. Again, the game was declared void and was abandoned. And then he came in for the second playing of it. And they physically bullied them. And I think that doubt was always there in German teams' minds of an English side can really get at us. And you go in that game, you've got Chapman, who's physically huge. Cantona, who's, I think, bigger than people sort of imagine.
Oh, yeah.
But also all elbows if he wanted to be.
Yeah.
He knew how to use his physicality. Yeah. And,
Batty, Speed, McAllister. You know, these players.
Classic diagonal from Strachan.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
Header down. Brilliant volley.
Yeah.
But it's a very English goal of a diagonal in the box, win the header, get the knockdown.
Absolutely. Beautiful.
Albeit involving a Scotsman, a Frenchman and a Welshman.
quite. And Leeds were battering them. And when they equalised on the night, Stuttgart. I mean, it absolutely flew in the face of the logic of that football match as it was becoming.
So our first goal 17 minutes and equalises 33.
And it was one of those moments. Again, here comes another classic cliche, but it was a pin drop moment.
Yeah.
You think, oh, how the hell has that happened?
It's such a soft goal as well.
Such a soft goal, yeah. They'd barely kicked the ball in the Leeds half. And so we'd passed the half hour mark now. And suddenly Leeds need four.
Yeah, it's Buck again.
Yeah.
And just nobody closes them down. You've got Speed and Fairclough and Dorigo all sort of stand off him.
Yeah.
And he just sort of squirts his little shot. And again, it's Lukic slow to get down to his right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He sort of dribbles in that far corner.
But again, it's another reminder of, oh, yeah, they are good, this German lot, aren't they?
Yes.
Perhaps we were. But they picked
themselves. Savvy.
Yeah, yeah. But they picked themselves up Leeds.
Well, they did.
And they go again.
They now needed to score four goals.
Yeah, they need to win 5-1 on them.
Yeah, and you know, that well, listen, it turned out to be unachievable. They didn't achieve it. But they came closer than they were entitled to do. They had to score before half-time, and they did. They got a penalty. Big Buchwald, already mentioned.
Panicking, really, against Chapman.
Yeah, Chapman just wrapped him up.
another Strachan cross.
Yeah. And Gary McAllister, who, of course, 2 or 3 years later, go on famously to miss a very high-profile penalty for his country, scored a massive one for Leeds. And so, 2-1 at half-time, kind of, you know...
A little bit of optimism.
Yeah, you've got to score three goals and a half.
Yeah, well, they did it.
Absolutely,
you think, well, why can't we?
It sort of feels on. And again, nothing to lose. And Leeds get the next goal midway through the second half, and it's probably the ugliest goal Cantona's ever scored.
It's a funny goal.
It's a scuffy little effort.
I can't work out how much he means. I said, again, it's a Strachan ball in.
Yeah.
And he ends up sort of lifting it over... it's Ike Immelin goal, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the other thing. Three of the Stuttgart team go on to play for Manchester City, which is quite weird. but he sort of lifts it over with his knee.
Yes.
And I can't work out...
Do you think he might have done that on purpose?
I'm sure the bit where the ball sort of bobbles about and gets down to his knee was not deliberate. But I do wonder whether Cantona had the sort of the quickness of thought and reaction as the ball drops to think, well, keeper's just there with a little bit of space.
Well, he's a special enough player to do that sort of silly thing, isn't he? Yeah. But listen, however you interpret the goal, it really did light the place up, because now they had 24 minutes to score twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is eminently
indeed
possible. And apart from any football technicality you might or might not want to talk about, what Leeds displayed then was fitness. Uh-huh. Which is certainly what Sergeant Wilco, as he was known, insisted upon. He had a lieutenant fellow called Mick Hennigan, who was a classic old school coach. And if you talk to any of the players of that generation, they'll tell you that Mick Hennigan was the guy who just sent them on lap after lap of the pitch and press ups and sit ups.
One of those guys.
Yeah, one of those real sort of Sergeant Major type.
Yeah.
And the Leeds fitness was. Probably as much as anything else, apart from the talented players we've mentioned, what had won them the league, you know, they could run for 95 minutes hard, run hard. And their capacity for running hard into the last quarter of this sort of impossible task was fantastic. And then 12 minutes out, another Strachan delivery from a corner, actually. And Lee Chapman, for all I said about him just being big and uncomplicated and the ball bouncing off him, and he scored a lot of ugly goals. Actually, he got in front of his mark, he got in front of the near post, and it was a very, very deft near post header, wasn't it?
It's one of those goals, it looks so simple. You say, why don't we just do that all the time?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's a corner and a man heads it from 4 yards or something, but but you're right,
it's
the movement, it's the kind of little, you know, the deftness to be able to guide it in there.
But if it doesn't feel like it's the importance of the tie, you feel like, and at 5-0 up, Chapman then helps himself to the sixth of the thing. Exactly, you know, it felt like one of those.
Even Brian Moore's commentary, he's almost a little bit. He's still sort of talking about the corner being taken. And, oh, it's sort of
it's in. It's
yeah,
in,
yeah. But he's late on the goal because it seems so implausibly simple.
Yeah,
and implausible sort of felt like the word then, because it was one of those moments, as often is the case when you're in the moment with a two-legged tie, you're sort of remaking the calculation in your head. What does this mean? And here is this realisation that one more.
Yeah.
One more.
And still 12 minutes plus injury time to get it.
12 minutes to go. Yeah. Extraordinary. But of course, the most significant factor in the whole leg, the most significant moment in the whole tie happened 5 minutes after the goal when the manager unknowingly sent on this fellow who nobody had heard of called Jovica Simonic, in place of Gaudino, who was a Serbian centre-back. This was his only first-team appearance for Stuttgart.
The eight vital minutes.
8 minutes he came on, and he was one foreigner too many. And I'd looked up his career, I expect you did too. And after that, he went to Benfica, didn't play a game, And then he played a handful of games for Boa Vista, and then he drifted around Portugal for a few years.
Bit of a shame, really, for him.
But that was his European Cup tie. And he was, well, it wasn't his fault.
Of course not.
But he was the reason why the following Saturday Leeds were suddenly back in it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you want to cover those last 12 minutes. Uh-huh. There were nearish things. But as when the final whistle went, it was one of those moments where there was united adulation for Leeds. It had been an absolutely magnificent effort any yardstick.
There's a great shot as the final whistle goes. I think it's from a camera behind the goal of Strachan. I think the whistle goes as Immel clears it.
Yes.
And you see Strachan's sort of going towards it and the whistle goes and the slump of his shoulders. And he's only 10 yards from the touchline, mm-hmm. just walks straight off.
It's a bit of a strange, one that, isn't it? When you have... We covered on this very podcast before Fulham beating Juventus 4-1.
Oh yes,
and I was at the stadium that day, and it's kind of like if Fulham had beaten Juventus 3-1, well, admit it would have gone to extra. I say 4-2. What an effort! And you go away thinking, it would have just been so bloody lovely to get.
And it's one of those occasions when you sort of, away goals is a joke.
I know, and so you have such an amazing sort of 90 minutes. They give you, your team gives you such a cheer and such hope when you thought that wasn't possible, but ultimately they come up short. Yeah. So it's a strange one because, as you say, a lot of adulation, but there is that feeling of, we were so close.
Yeah.
So you, as a local radio reporter, when did you first get wind of... Well, something's up here.
News broke the next day.
The following day?
Yeah, that was Thursday. I've checked the dates, obviously I don't remember those. But that was, the match was Wednesday the 30th of September. The news broke on Thursday the 1st of October you say news broke. Somebody just must have noticed. Simple as that. Someone must have said, hey, how come?
I mean, it seems a crazy mistake.
It would never happen today.
No.
And again, it shows us kind of innocence.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the rules are different today, but...
And also, just on the team sheet, or at least some of the team sheets you look at, they've got the little flag.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But also as well, back then, you know, quite clearly you didn't have as many foreigners in the side. And he's not got a German surname as well. And it's quite clearly he's foreign.
Well, you say that. I mean, Gaudino, obviously, it's an Italian name, but he was German.
Well, look, I just think I'm just merely adding to the fact that how strange and how sloppy that and how costly that mistake was for Stuttgart. You know, as you say, the champions of Germany are in, in the European Cup and all, and they make
It just seems such a strange decision that with 8 minutes to go in this sort of cauldron, you're looking to cling on. Oh, where's that lad who's never played this before? put him on.
Yeah, in this cauldron at Elland Road. I mean, what are they
thinking? Getting conspiratorial now. Yeah. but crazy. So the next day we learned that, or somebody pointed out that this was the case, and obviously I guess UEFA went into a spin. And then, some of this I remember, some of it I've looked at over the last week or so. The debates were huge. Mm. Leeds were immediately and not unreasonably on their high horse saying, listen, they should be out. They should be out. Stuttgart held their hand up and said, absolutely, and sort of begged for mercy. And said, honest, we didn't mean this.
Yeah.
You know, please don't be too hard on us.
It was only 8 minutes.
It was only 8 minutes and kind of, did it make any difference?
And we looked fairly comfortable.
Yeah, and honest, you know. And so they were quite humble about it.
Yeah.
Except to the extent, and I don't know whether this was the club itself or maybe some of the sort of noise around the club. Mm. But I read that they started trying to argue that Gary Speed as a Welshman should count and Strachan as a Scotsman.
Is it right?
Yeah. And so they were sort of saying points of the... And of course, none of that held any credence at all. But so they got slightly desperate. But Christoph Daum admitted the fault, pleaded guilty, and... the quote was, he called for a merciful ruling. And the ruling came through the following Saturday, where Leeds were having a game, which was very typical of their season. They lost 4-2 at Ipswich that Saturday. and on the same day, learned that although they had argued that Stuttgart should be disqualified, the second leg had been awarded 3-0. which was a lovely, convenient state of affairs for UEFA, wasn't it? Because 3-0 is that kind of classic sanctioned scoreline, which they tends to be default, but also fitted the scenario beautifully where they could keep everybody half happy and say, let's have another game.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so that's what happened.
Yeah. My goodness.
And then for some reason they decided this is going to be played in Barcelona.
Yeah.
Which I guess is equally inconvenient for everybody.
Yeah, true.
Were you that? Were you at
no,
that
I wasn't
one?
At that game. In fact, I was sat in the studio of BBC Leeds presenting our local radio programme for it.
Okay.
So I remember it well because I had to miss a major family event, which didn't go down well domestically. Because, you know, that Friday night, of course I was going to be free.
Yeah.
Leeds, I think in that week, had to postpone a League Cup tie against Scunthorpe to go to Barcelona, which is a nice juxtaposition. Went to Barcelona, you know, capacity 100,000. There were 7,500 in there, including, extraordinarily, actually, 2,500-3,000 from Leeds. Leeds supporters who hadn't known the venue or hadn't known of the existence of the game till the previous weekend and hadn't known that it was going to be in Barcelona until a day or two after that. And that says something about the crazed Leeds support.
Yeah.
But I mean, they couldn't make themselves heard. And again,
it's always eerie when a game is played.
It was eerie.
Yeah.
It was eerie, but it was a remarkable game again. Because I wasn't there, I don't remember it in the same detail. But Gordon Strachan scored an absolute
beautiful goal.
Oh, he was such a good player.
Yeah.
He was such a good player, and he went on forever, didn't he? Even at Coventry at the age of 71.
That's right. You know,
he was still knocking them in.
Eating his 15 bananas a day or whatever it was.
Yeah,
it was bananas he put it down to, wasn't
right,
it?
Yeah. And then, actually, the Stuttgart equaliser, a very good diving header.
Mm.
And then to add to the sort of the tapestry of this of this whole tie, the winner was scored by a journeyman pro.
Who'd come on for Cantona,
exactly. Who'd come on, and he was put through by Tony DiRigo, who, as mentioned, didn't have a great game in Stuttgart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure his through ball should have got through, but it did. And Carl Schutt, who was an understudy.
Mm-hmm.
He really was an understudy. I mean, we've mentioned Chapman, we've mentioned Wallace, we've mentioned Cantona. We haven't mentioned Schutt because nobody did.
Uh-huh.
And he came on, and actually, he had a lot to do. He had a lot to do. He had a lot of thinking time.
Uh-huh.
This was the moment of his life.
Mm.
Oh, my God.
And probably should have squared it to Strachan.
Maybe. Yeah. Strachan probably thought so. Yeah. And he rolled it in.
Yeah.
And it was
what a collector's item for Schutt, though.
Yo, correct. I mean,
but this was just
the else. Winner at the Nou Camp against the German champions in the Champions glorious. Yeah. Marvellous.
But obviously we... Yeah, we don't have a huge amount of time to talk about the Rangers ties, which were brilliant, and hopefully we'll do them in a future podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that Rangers team,
because this set up the Battle of Britain after, as we mentioned earlier.
I am right with this. They had McSwiggin kept coming off the bench and scoring ridiculous goals.
He did against Marseille. Yeah.
Well, maybe it was only once, but it felt like they had this.
I know what you mean.
This sort of,
but Hateley was there.
Hateley McCoist.
Yeah.
McCoist.
I mean, they were
another former Sunderland striker.
Yeah. I will just say this about I know you're looking to wind up, I understand that, and we've done what we had to do, but the extraordinary thing about the Leeds-Rangers tie was that there were no away fans.
Yeah.
And so we went as the local radio station covering Leeds, and anybody who remembers that tie remembers that in the very first minute, Gary McAllister scores a
great volley.
Absolute worldie.
Yeah.
And the place went silent, all bar... squeaky early 20s me going, and Leeds have scored
with your English accent
and I just remember thinking, oh my God, I'm the only person talking and I'm talking very, very loudly and everybody was turning around looking at me and talking of noise.
Old firm football fans are usually quite forgiving though.
But the silence, the kind of juxtaposition of the silence and the noise as it regenerated itself at kickoff was extra. I've never known a growl like that Ibrox growl when they said, right, we've gone 1-0 down, are you sure? And poor old John Lukic punched one in from a corner and lost the ball in the floodlights and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was a great tie.
But it is funny, though.
Tie.
It is. Yeah, but it's funny, though, because as you say, you know, Leeds went out in the second round.
Yes.
Yet, actually, those who remember their short-lived campaign, although three games rather than two, you would think, an extraordinary first round.
Five brilliant games in their own way.
Five
absolutely. Games and they didn't reach the group stage.
Yeah.
And they went out to Rangers, who, by the way, in a Champions League in its embryonic stages where two groups led straight to a final.
Yeah, the semi-finals, you had eight teams on it. It was very strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Marseille just missed out on the... Rangers finished just behind Marseille in their group.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at it in detail, really should have made the final.
Well,
Rangers
and also,
were that good.
Should Marseille even have been
Marseille shouldn't even have been there,
absolutely.
You would argue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Rangers were tip-top.
I think, well, we mentioned Marseille in there. I'll just leave it there. We've got to go. Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on
Great
Games.
It has been to me too.
Thank you very much, guys.
Appreciate it.
Of course, for more stories like that, go to theblizzard.co.uk. But yeah, marvellous stuff. Thank you as always, Jonathan. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time for another great game of football.
Fairclough with the cross towards Gary Speed. Couldn't quite knock it back to the liking of Chapman, but a bad clearance again going straight to Strachan. Returning it, a fantastic goal for Leeds United. Good, Strachan puts Leeds ahead.
Good ball there.
Played for Scrable. Crossed in by him. Well, it's Gorka who scored the equaliser.
Shot, his first touch. The puck is there, shot now.
Now, can he find Strachan? He had a chance to find Strachan, but he finds the net. He's straight on Carl Schott, who celebrates a birthday tomorrow and celebrates a goal tonight.
An absolute masterstroke by manager Howard Wilkinson. And a joyous sight there for all fans of Leeds United. Carl Schott puts Leeds 2-1 ahead.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.